Welcome to TSOB with Dr. G, a podcast featuring intellectual table talk about race and sexuality. I'm your host, Dr. Tracy Q. Gilbert, a sexuality educator, writer, and researcher. Join me as I talk with the most brilliant minds in human sexuality, applying a professional Black lens to discussions about sexiness, health, and healing in the new millennium. It's TSOB, the sex ed of Black folk. Let's get to the get down, shall we? Hello, 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 y'all. Yeah. Welcome to another episode of TSOB with me, Dr. G. As always, I am super excited to be here with y'all, and I'm looking forward to another phenomenal conversation. The last episode you heard was the first part of what will be a two-part series entitled Sex Ed in the Spirit, and I'm super excited to have the guest for the second part of that with me. I'm talking about none other than Dr. Shakira Abdullah, aka the Halal Sexpert. I'm going to read Shakira's bio, and then we are going to get into it as we usually do. So, Dr. Shakira Abdullah, again, also known as the Halal Sexpert, is a sexologist with a master's degree in human sexuality and a family nurse practitioner with a Doctor of Nursing practice degree. She is passionate about providing sexuality education to the Muslim community from an Islamic perspective. Dr. Abdullah will earn her PhD in human sexuality from Widener University in 2024. Definitely a brilliant person. Someone I'm just super excited to see that I've had a personal relationship with as a student in one of my classes, but just seeing her also in the public sphere, just doing her thing and educating communities. I'm just super excited to hear about all the things that she is and all the things that she's doing and to introduce her to y'all. So without further ado, Dr. Shakira Abdullah, welcome to TSOB.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. It's such an honor to be here. Like, I'm just in awe that I was asked to be on the show.
Well, it is an honor to have you here just because I think you are doing such amazing work. Like, it's so funny when people are like, I'm honored. I'm like, I talk to brilliant people. I'm excited to talk to people who are doing unique, exciting things. And so I'm excited and honored to have you here and that you said yes. So I'm looking forward to our conversation. So let's jump in right away. I'm going to ask you the question that I ask all guests, and it's a three-part question. So it is, first part is, where are you from? Second part is, where are your people from? And the third question is, what's got you thinking about sex and sexuality these days?
Okay, so I am from Jersey. I'm from Northern New Jersey. Okay. From a small town, yeah. And then my mom is from New Jersey. My father is from the South. They met in Jersey and they got married and kind of stayed there.
Okay.
And then what has got me talking about sexuality?
Yeah, thinking about it, like anything going on that's got you thinking about it these days.
These days? Well, what really got me into it was my just personal story. I guess just living as a human being and coming to terms with my sexuality and not having spaces where I can talk about it, which really led me to create those spaces.
Yes. I love that. I love that so much. And so, and I'm kind of like, for the Jersey people who are listening, I'm like, what's the small towns? And from the South, what are these towns? Because, you know, you think you don't have anybody listening, but we've got people listening all over the world. So it might be somebody who's like, oh, I know that town. I've been there. So what towns?
My mom was born and raised in Roselle, New Jersey, which is right outside of Elizabeth, Newark, that area. So I kind of grew up in that area. And then my dad is from Kershaw, South Carolina, which is I don't even know, like, very rural.
I'm always interested in Black folks' origin stories, especially in our country, just because they're, you know, we've had to do so much traveling over the years. And so especially when folks are like from the little towns, I'm like, yes, rep your little town, because they deserve to be represented. So shouts out to anybody who's listening from Roselle, New Jersey, and from, what was it, the South Carolina?
Kershaw.
I'm going to ask, we had Dr. Rena Dixon on here from South Carolina. I wonder if she knows that town, so I'm going to ask her. Mm-hmm. You've already started talking about it. Tell us a little bit more about how you got into this work of sex ed.
Yeah, so I was born and raised Muslim. My parents converted to Islam when they got married, and they raised me and my siblings to be Muslim, and they really wanted to make sure it was a huge part of our foundation. They sent us to Arabic schools, which is like the origin of our religious texts and everything. So they sent us to Arabic school, Quran schools. They sent me to Egypt over the summer, like really to just gain this rich and really love God and just live it, you know, in our lifestyle. And I did until I got to high school, and then I got around peers, and then it became, you got to get this boyfriend. And that is really was like put on this pedestal. Like, so fast forward, long story short, 2 months after my high school graduation, I found out I was pregnant, and my parents were like shocked. Like, how did this happen? We sent you to Egypt. Like we did everything.
We did it, right? Like, what happened?
And it's like, but you never talked to me about, you know, sex and relationships and what to do. Like, it was just like, yeah, one day I want to get married, but right now I want to have this boyfriend. And it was never, So that is what led me to do this work. Originally, it started off as a nonprofit and just doing, like, sex ed for youth. And then it transformed to doing those workshops for the youth. They were like, you know, I can only talk to you about this, Dr. Shakira. You're the only one. I was like, well, there's only one of me. So I need to start educating parents. So then it was just, the Halal Sex Cert was primarily designed to be for parents. And then my friends were like, well, we don't have kids, but we still need to talk about sex. So so then I started doing workshops for, you know, single people. And so it just became like, okay, I have something for everybody.
I love that. And kind of having watched your journey and seeing how you've grown, I love that you've been able to just kind of adapt to where the need has been expressed. There's a few things in there, things that you've said that I feel like we could pick up on and go on. But the one thing that really kind of stuck out to me is the similarity. So you and I have talked about this, but for those listening, as I said in the last episode, I grew up in the Christian church, so I have that experience. But I feel like there's a lot of different there's some similarities between kind of what you feel like you grew up hearing in the Muslim church or in the Muslim community and what some folks might have heard in the Christian community of, like, well, nobody's talking about it and nobody's kind of having these conversations, and people are just growing up assuming, or people are assuming that young folks just kind of, they're knowing that, no, you don't do this thing, and then things are happening. I'd love to hear your thoughts around talking about, like, Black folks being Muslims, right? Usually when folks talk about Black folks in religion, it's all Christianity. But we know, especially in the East Coast and especially in, like, Philly, places like Philly, like, there's sizable African-American Muslim populations. Talk a little bit about what that was like, especially what you saw. I know you had your experience, but what was it like for your peers in terms of talking about sex and navigating that and those sorts of things? And did you see any similarities between that and your Christian folks?
Especially there's this culture shock in America about Muslims. If you think about Muslims, you think about Arab Muslims and not African American Muslims. And then even in the African American culture, I feel like Islam is so palpable from the names and you know, Arabic names, like, you know, Aisha is an Arabic name, Khadija is an Arabic name, Ibn, like all these popular names in the Black community are Islamic, like Arabic names. And then even in, like, the hip hop culture, you think about Lauryn Hill and her it's there, you know. And everyone, usually when you go to those pockets, those African American pockets, you know someone who are Muslim, and they pretty much know, like, the three top things, like, okay, you're Muslim, so you cover your hair, you don't eat pork, and I know that your husband can have more than two wives, like that. That's just that's all we know.
There's no pork. I will say that this reminds me of a story. I was a freshman in high school, and there was this guy that was I thought was adorable, right? And out of nowhere, he asked me, "Did I want some of his bean pie?" And I had never heard. I was like. And so me, in my warped thinking, because he wasn't holding it out to show me, I thought he was making a sexual reference, like he was trying to be rude or trying to be fresh. And I was like, I don't want none of your bean pie. And I realized, like, oh, no, that's actually a food. And that's actually also part of also part of Islam tradition and religion. So there's lots of misunderstanding there.
Yes.
Yeah. And yet there's so many overlaps. Just kind of the culture of being Black and just kind of mm-hmm. how that overlaps as well. What was it like then, because you're the only one, what was it like for folks in your community when you were like, yeah, so I'm going to study sex and I'm going to be this person and I'm going to be official?
I got the best of both worlds. Like, so I got a lot of support from religious leaders. They were actually the ones who were kind of like uplifting me and supporting me. Like, yes, I know we need this in our communities. But I got a lot of backlash from people in my own family to, your older, just like your older African-American church folks. We have the same thing in our Muslim communities and our Muslim places of worship. And, they're the elders and they're like, no, we do not talk about sex in public. Like, this is something private. Like, you're doing too much. Like, mm-hmm. There's nothing to study. Then after I told them what, my goals were and what I'm teaching about, because initially when I first started this work, when I first started at Widener, I thought as a Muslim sexologist, the only thing I could teach about is abstinence. Mm. And I mm-hmm. like really applaud Widener for really broadening my scope of what sexuality means and mm-hmm. just forcing me to really dig deeper into. And then I learned that Islam is such a sex positive religion. And it's just like, wow, who knew? Like, it was just then helping people. So then I have to do all this unpacking for my community because they were still very restricted and thinking that, delaying sex until marriage is all, that's it. Like, there's nothing else beyond that. So just really opening their minds and helping them see that this is something that God created. This is something that can be beautiful. And just really navigating, how they can embrace both their spirituality and their sexuality in a way that's pleasing to God.
Yeah, that's really, really awesome, too, because I think adding on to what you said about the stereotypes around Islam and Muslim communities, like, it's this idea of like, oh, everybody's got to be covered and it's so conservative and regressive and all of these mm-hmm. other things mm-hmm. when much of the faith is like actually within the faith, there's lots of really beautiful and sexy things about mm-hmm. sex that goes on within marriages and within the certain context. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really beautiful. So let me ask you the question, and I think you kind of alluded to it, so maybe you already know, or maybe you need to think about it. I ask the question of everyone. If you had to pick one thing, or maybe multiple things, what would you say is your sex ed superpower?
I would say it's really helping Muslim people. So whether you are single, married, a youth person, a parent, really embrace your sexuality where you are. In your spirituality and learning that your sexuality is a part of your humanness and that God allows that. And just navigating through that in a way that is pleasing to God, in a way that is going to be not oppressive to you because of different views of sexuality today. So just, I think my superpower is really helping people embrace that.
Yeah. I love it. It's very similar to what Brittany shared when she was here about being able to help people marry those two. And I think that's just so beautiful because it can be very easy. And again, I say this on the outside as someone who has had her experience with religion and still feels very strongly about her faith, but not so much about religion, that it can be really easy to be like, you know what, throw it all away and nobody should do it. But for some people, they really are able to find a beautiful synergy with bringing those pieces together. And I think that's really, really awesome. There was something else that I thought about when I was thinking about the overlaps between Islam and Christianity in terms of some of the things you've said that I'm like, that feels similar. And I was thinking about the specific piece of you wanting to work with young people and then thinking, oh, you know what? I need to work with parents. And then adults and some of who are parents are like, actually, we don't have it either. And so I'm curious, related to that, if there was anything, and I could be putting, like, leading you to an answer, but if there was anything that you feel like, you know what? Black folks, all of us, seem to get this piece wrong. We could be doing better around this. Or even in just within your community, we need to do better around this particular topic, or we're not quite getting this right. What would you say that is and why?
For Black people specifically, a lot is communicating comfortably about it, like without the shame. Mm. So we're so used to your mom saying, you better not bring no baby home. And, when it comes to sex, the only thing you know, you can only get pregnant and you can get an STD and that's all it's about. And, you know, it's just really limiting and not talking about, you know, like pleasure and those pieces. And I feel like Black people, especially youth and parents, is mm-hmm. always about, you know, what can we do to protect them? But yeah, really about, I guess, the shame and the communication piece. Like, how do I talk to my kids about sex in a comfortable way? And then with the youth, it's like just really limiting, this limiting idea of sexuality in general.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think about my research, right? And when I talk to people who talked about that shame and talked about the hesitation and the challenges of being able to like express themselves sexually, and they talked about where they felt like that came from, religion was a huge thing that people talked about. Mm-hmm. And so being someone who's within an actual religious faith, what are some strategies that you take when you're with someone who is like, yeah, I don't know what to, like, I can't, you know, they're still thinking through those boxes. Like, how do you help work with them to get out of those boxes?
I use religious texts. I've done a lot of research, a lot of help. I've talked to a lot of Islamic scholars. So I use like our Quran, which is our, pretty much our Bible, like our religious texts. Mm-hmm. I use the Quran. I use prophetic stories, which are, we call hadiths, and these are stories of the life of different prophets, including the Prophet Muhammad, may peace and blessings be upon him, and his life, and, you know, other prophets, and how they talked about sexuality, and how they had different experiences, and just teaching, you know, they know the story, but just giving them this, reiterating the stories, and just highlighting those points is like, wow, you know, I never thought of it that way, or I didn't think about it that way. And just reminding them of basic things, like Brittany says, you know, God created my clitoris. And that, mm-hmm. to me, that was a huge aha moment for me when I was in her workshops. And that really kind of let, and she always talks about me, but she really created the halal sex work, because I was in her workshop and I was like, oh my God, mm-hmm. like, just like, yeah, duh. So helping other religious people of faith have those aha moments,
yeah,
and recognizing that sex is not this dirty, filthy thing, and it's a part of your humanness, and it's something that, you know, God created for you, and how to navigate that in a way that's pleasing to him, is you can do that. So mm-hmm. So I really just pull from religious texts often in all my workshops. I'm always highlighting different stories, things that the prophet did, things that the prophet said, things that God said. So to really give them, so then it's like, oh, okay. So then they feel comfortable and more and safer to then, okay, so now let me teach you this.
Yeah. Okay. That's very awesome. We're getting through this conversation so quickly. I'm like, I want to ask you so much more. Have you said you've kind of had some folks who were like, I'm not quite sure with what this is that you're doing. As you've grown though, do you feel like that has lessened some, or do you still get backlash, and how do you handle that?
I recognize, because at first I was taking a lot of things personal, and it was really heavy on me, and I was just like, I don't think I could do this. Like, this, people just coming for me on all different angles. But then I had to take a step back and say, you know, it's not me. It's just this idea, like this whole topic. People have different experiences, and a lot of them have this baggage, right? And it's like, and all this misinformation on this idea of being religious, and not, you can't be religious and sexual, and, you know, mm-hmm. you know, so they're having this in their mind, and they see me, like, I can create a reel, or they can see a post of mine, and it just, like, red flag, like, no, like, that's wrong.
Right.
Because I've never seen it before. So I have to kind of, like, meet them where they are, and just kind of spoon feed them and just help them get to a higher level.
Yeah. That actually makes me think of a question. So we have a lot of sex educators who listen to the podcast, and, you know, thinking of those who may not be Muslim, right? I would imagine that it's a little bit easier because you are also of the faith, that mm-hmm. you're more likely to have a better in with folks, and people are more willing to listen to you. For those who are not Muslim, who might be working in Muslim communities or working with Muslim young people, what is some advice you might give them in terms of how to have conversations from a respectful place, from a place that's not shaming, or that's not on the other side of like assuming, oh, everything is super conservative and you can't mm-hmm. and you don't, and or I've seen some circles of like, oh, it's so repressive, we need to free them, we need to like give them their freedom, like, so what advice would you have for more respectful teaching?
So just like in Christianity in all religions, you have different followers of religion. Like the religion is perfect, but the followers, you know, they have, there are different levels. So finding out where your audience is, or where the person you're talking to, what do they believe personally? Where are they at? What are they following? And that's the same thing with me and with the Muslim community in general. Some of them are, you know, follow everything to the T. And some people are, you know, just kind of Muslim by name. So there's different spectrums and different levels. But as an educator, I think it's important to communicate and see where they are. And then you can always bring in religious texts or different books I'll recommend as well, and kind of when it, because a lot of times a lot of Muslims, they're constantly striving to please God in everything that they do, so it's kind of like, okay, is this okay, is this something that we can do, this is something that so it's a lot of those type of questions. And I always tell them, like, listen, I'm not a scholar, like I'm not, you know, that's not me. I can let you know what research I find, and I can kind of point you in the right direction and point you to these different books. But it's important for educators to not assume that everyone follows this same idea as to what's permissible and what's not. So yes, communicating with them, using like your book resources, because that can give you like the religious text, and just also for you, for I think as a sex educator, what I've come to terms with my peers is that they do, like, you have your own idea of what it means to be freely sexual, and you doing kind of whatever you want. But understand that, similar to like a lot of us may have like vegan friends who they have this idea that, you know, they're not going to eat meat and dairy or whatever. And let's say, even if they're in an emergency situation where it's like let's say a person is pregnant and they have to get their iron levels up, and they come to your house and you know they got to get their iron levels up, you're not going to cook them a whole meal of meat.
Right.
Because like you're going to do your research and say, okay, well, I know this vegetable has high levels of iron and that's what I'm going to give you. So the same thing with religious people. This is something that we strongly value. This is something that really, something that we hold close to. And yes, we do want to have a sexual experience, but by just throwing away our spirituality and throwing away our religion for that sexual experience can be oppressive. So you don't want to do that. So you want to just help them kind of navigate through. It's like, you can still be your religious, you can still be vegan, and you can still also have your high levels of iron, if that makes sense. I tried that.
Yeah. I love that. I'm always down for other references. And as having taken on a plant-based diet within the last few months, I'm like, yep, you're right. You can't just be giving people no steak just because their iron levels are low. You got to eat them, you know. So you said something, I'm reminded of a part of the conversation that I had with Brittany, where she was talking about what it's like interacting with folks when they ask her certain questions. And I'm curious if you have this experience too, because of what you said. You said something about people wanting to please God and asking questions like, is this okay? Or is that okay? Mm-hmm. And you being like, I'm not a scholar. Do you find that struggle of like people wanting you to like give them permission or give them like shame for something that they may be struggling with? And how do you navigate that if that's the case?
I remind them that, first of all, that God is all forgiving, and I help them kind of navigate where they are, kind of walk through what they're thinking about. Because usually it's something like, you know, I've been doing this thing, I feel really bad about it. What do you think about it? And I can say, well, according to the religious test, this, and just kind of walking them through it and helping them get back to a place where to navigate through that. So for us, a huge thing is asking for forgiveness. If it is something that they feel like they sinned or they did something that was displeasing to God, in Islam, we don't have this view where, you know, God loves all things and he's like, but it's like you're going to be held accountable for what you did. So kind of own that, and now, but realize that that was a mistake, and now you can still overcome that mistake and you can still move past that by asking God to forgive you, and then kind of, just like a GPS, you know, you reroute yourself and do, you know, go right. another way.
Right.
You were going the wrong way, but now you're going the right way. So right. helping them to not just, you know, sit in that shame and just fall into despair and all of that, and just help them, you know, and then give them strategies on how that, what that looks like in real life and how to navigate. And I did a lot with the youth, but also with parents and adults and married, like everyone, to come to terms.
Like, there's got
to
be some pressure with that, though. Do you ever feel that pressure of like, look, I'm not your imam. Like, I can't tell you, like, oh, you know, you're going to be damned or, you know, or you're going to be okay.
But no, I let them know, because pretty much what I say is, like, for example, in Islam, there's only two things, and a lot of people are, like, blown by this, but in Islam, there's only two things that are completely, like, forbidden, mm-hmm. And that's no sex during menstruation and no anal sex. So a lot of questions I get, and those are only two things. Everything else is, like, a gray area. There's a difference of opinion, but those are the only two things that are, like, completely, like, no, you can't do those things. So, of course, people always are like, well, can I use toys in my anus, or can I, and I'm like, listen, those are the only two things. There are so many other things that you can do, but I was like, I'm not a scholar. My personal opinion is to stay away from it, but you know, you do what you want to do. But it's just like, there's so, like, because we have this view that Shaitan or the devil beautifies things that are forbidden. So, like, for us, another thing that Islam, we don't drink alcohol. So, and that's the only drink. You think about all the drinks in the world, alcohol is the only drink. Right. And of course, he's going to beautify alcohol. Like, he's all the commercials, all the, like, it's so cool to drink alcohol, but it's like, there's so many other drinks you could just enjoy your life. There's so many other drinks you could
get
drink,
the sparkling water and calm.
Yeah. Get your other drinks. So that's what I try to do as a sexologist, to just beautify other things and help them kind of stay away from those two things. But I love that. So my education is focused on all the other things.
Got it. Oh, I love that. I love that. Okay, Shakira, so let's say someone is coming to you and they're like, you know, they may be Muslim, they may not. And they're like, I appreciate everything that you have to say about, like, the beauty of sex. Mm-hmm. How do I begin to go on that journey of deconditioning myself from what I've been taught? How do I, you know, work with my kids? How do I help my kids? How do I move forward? What would be some initial advice or that you'd give them in terms of how they get started on this journey towards essentially sex positivity?
Mm-hmm. I would say first to just focus on themselves and just really remember that God created and designed them, and then come to terms that this is a part of their human experience. Mm-hmm. And just reframing on how they view sex and how they view sexuality and how they view themselves. And a lot of times we've been socialized to, you know, have this picture of what it means to be sexy. And just for a spiritual person, just remembering that, you know, God, you didn't have to create your body to experience pleasure, and how you have the ability to experience pleasure in so many ways, beyond than just your genitals, but just in so many ways and through our senses and everything, and just experiencing pleasure on purpose through our everyday life, and then being grateful to God for that, and how that can be a means of getting closer to God and strengthening your relationship with God, because you've realized all these things that he created and designed for you to feel good in your everyday life through your sexuality. So just owning that and being grateful for that, I think, is a way for it to grow.
Yeah, I definitely see that. That sounds awesome. And I just realized I'm getting ready to kind of wrap up our questions in just a little bit. But I realized I want to give you space to talk about your retreats and like, so y'all, again, like I said at the beginning, Dr. Abdullah is a student of mine. I got familiar with her work when she first came to our university and was like, hey, can we chat? And there was like a bunch of different times we were trying to meet. And my brain sometimes is on planet 47, and it was just difficult. But eventually we got to talk, and just to see the journey from like, I want to work with young people to like, now I'm hosting retreats with a whole bunch of women and we are getting our life. Like, talk about that journey and talk about what that was like to host. That was your first retreat this summer that you just did. Yeah. So talk about that and what that was like.
So that was just amazing, mind-blowing. I'm just so, so, so grateful to God that it exceeded my own expectations. It was wow.
And tell people the name of it. Tell people, like, what that was, how that went.
Yes. So my first retreat was called the Reclaiming Me Retreat. So Sexual Wellness and Rejuvenation Retreat for Women. And it was really about helping women of all ages, whether they were single, married, no matter what their ethnicity was. And really just help them embrace their spirituality and their sexuality in a way that's pleasing to God. So I had people from, you know, from, I think my youngest person was like in their 19, 20, all the way to like in their late 50s. So it was just beautiful to see. And then the bond that they built together, of course, you know, the workshops for not just me, but just like so, and then the different activities. I had a dance instructor there. We did like a we had a twerk fest soiree. We had we had a seductive masterclass. We had a sex toys 101 workshop, and just different ways. We had different group therapy sessions, like one on sexual confidence and mindfulness, and just helping them navigate through their everyday challenges on how, you know, challenges with how they view their bodies and misinformation, miseducation they've got, sexual trauma, and just really building this sisterhood that they, I think it will just last a lifetime. And then at the end, you know, when I was doing my closing address and I let them, you know, chime in on what they loved, they had me in tears. It was just like them just saying how grateful they were and how they just, they said, this is like priceless, like life changing, like this retreat. So it was 4 days and five nights, and it was in Florida. We, I rented out this entire mansion, and we had 25 women, and it was just amazing.
It sounds amazing. That is awesome. That is definitely awesome. I would love for you, especially in light of what you just shared, I'd love you to kind of share your thoughts on kind of where you are. And I know this may be challenging because you exude so much humility, but I would love for you to kind of think about your identity right now at this moment in time, right? Like when I first started this podcast, this was right at the height of like COVID and everything that was happening in our country around race and all of that. And just feeling like, okay, the world seems to be changing in a lot of ways, right? And, mm-hmm. and a lot of that, some of it's kind of gone back to normal, but some of it is very, very different. And so I'd love for you to think about kind of your place within this moment in time where there's still so much change happening. And as a specific educator that has your unique position, what do you feel like your either role or influence or maybe even your legacy is to be in this work?
Well, initially it was, I got to educate everybody. Like I have to meet, you know, help meet Muslims where they are and just really educate them. And then once I started doing that and doing these workshops and then doing like, you know, group therapy sessions and being a facilitator and that type of thing, it was just like, we have so much healing to do. And it was just like, it's like now that they're educated, it's like, okay, I like now I need to book a set. Like they're like, I need to book a session. I need some one-on-one time. And it's like, well, I'm not a therapist. Like I can educate you. But I'm not there yet. So, you know, I'm really grateful that, you know, being a professor at Widener, I was able to continue. So aside from the PhD program I'm in, I'm also becoming a social worker so that I can be this licensed social worker and kind of have those skills to not only educate the population, but also help them heal and help other people. Because I already have some Muslim women, even Muslim men saying, you know, how do I do this? I want to do what you do. And like, so trying to come up with ways on how I can educate the next generation, because I know I'm not going to live forever, to to really leave something so we can continue this. Because, you know, I'm really, I'm just so honored to do this, but it's sad that I'm the only, like, one of the, you know, the few. There are some other Muslim sexologists, but I mean, on my level, there's very few. So I'm so trying to help, you know, train the next generation is really
And I appreciate you saying that too, because I think in our field, I've seen it elsewhere, that folks can get really, they can kind of take a scarcity mentality around it of like, oh, well, if I open and let other people, if I share my gifts, then they'll take what's, you know, all the opportunities and there won't be enough for me. And it's, and I love in what I'm hearing you say, this idea of like, no, I'm here, but I'm going to bust the door open so we can all get in, because there needs to be more people. Like, it can't, all the work can't fall on you, right? Like, it has, especially when it comes to healing. Like, we need all hands on deck, as many as possible. So that sounds really, really amazing. And I'm so excited to see how you continue to build with this, because it's truly amazing work. So To end my interviews, I have five rapid-fire questions that I ask. They're basic sentence stems that you fill in the blank as I talk. Are you ready for them?
Yes.
Okay. And they're really, now I set them up like they're super high. They're really, really simple. So, so the first prompt is, sexiness is?
Twerky.
Twerking. Hey, I love it. I love that. The sexiest thing about blackness and or black people is?
There's so many things. Our resilience.
We get that a lot. We get a lot of folks saying that. Absolutely. But yes, of course. All the things. All the things. Next one. My go-to for feeling sexy is?
Oh, now I want to switch the turkey.
Well, it's fine.
Okay, I would say my go-to thing is twerking, but I guess sexiness is beauty.
Ooh, can I say that? Okay. Yes. You can say whatever comes to your mind. Okay, I love that. Okay. Next prompt. Sexual freedom for black folk is achieved when?
When they can embrace their uniqueness and honor. Ooh. Yes.
I like that. Last one. When I'm done being on this podcast, I will
do homework. Well, prepare for a school that starts next week.
Right. You and me both. I love that. Oh my goodness. This has been a really awesome conversation. Thank you so much for being on here, Dr. Abdullah. Please tell the people where they can find you. We kind of alluded to some of the cool stuff you're doing on Instagram with your reels and things. Let folks know all the places that they can find you if they want to know more or get in touch.
My Instagram is at the Halal Sexpert. My website is halalsexpert.com.
And that's H-A-L-A-L, folks. For folks who may not know how to spell that.
Yes. Okay. So, yes, reach out, come. All my links and everything is on, the Instagram page. The link in the bio is how you can sign up for the retreat. And I would love to have you. Yes. It's open to all people of all faiths. It's awesome. Just recommended that you have a faith because that's where, I'm going to talk about God.
And to be clear, I'm assuming, is it all for femme folks, women?
Yes.
So specifying. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So women, so men, y'all got to find another one. Y'all got to go somewhere else. But y'all can do it. Y'all figure it out. Figure everything else out. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, I definitely want to add a big ups for your Instagram. It is super entertaining. Between you and Brittany, I'm like thoroughly entertained by what y'all come up with, especially as someone who is not at all familiar with reels. Not that much. Like, it took 45 minutes to make my first reel, and I said, nope, we're done here. I'm not.
No, you gotta keep practicing, and then you'll get it.
I have to hire somebody else to do it for me. That's what I have to do. I have to get the budget to hire someone else, because I'm too old to be learning new tricks. Y'all got it. And pretty soon there will be an app that y'all will refuse to get on as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's coming.
Y'all will work it out. Anywho, though, we are done with this conversation. Hopefully y'all listening will continue to reflect on things that have been shared here and follow up with Dr. Abdullah. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening and take good care. Bye.
You've been listening to TSOB with Dr. G, produced by Dr. Tracy Q. Gilbert of Tembi and Aya. To keep up with all things TSOB, follow us on social media at TSOB The Podcast, which you can find on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. For past episodes of the show, visit tsobpodcast.com or subscribe to the show either on YouTube or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Now, don't forget that you've got homework for this episode. To find the downloadable worksheet for this or any other episode of the show, head on over again to tsobpodcast.com, where you'll find it and any other important information from the show notes. And finally, do you have any questions or thoughts to share? sound off by email at mailbox@tsobpodcast.com. Again, this was TSOB, the sex ed of Black folk. Thank you for listening. Talk again soon.